Eric, aren't you glad that you and I did not have to raise kids fighting the pull of smart devices like that?
Yeah, you know, my kids had phones. They didn't have smartphones when they were in high school, and I don't know what they did in college, but yeah, it is a distraction, and I see the problem. I don't think that it's necessarily realistic for parents to say that you need to have your phone with you at all times because there might be a school shooting and we need to contact you right away. That seems like a fairly thin excuse or reason to have your phone with you at all times. It does seem to me that they ought to have some sort of a policy where you can go into a classroom and put your phone into a little locker that maybe each student should have a little tiny locker, a key locker, like you have in a bus station or something, and you put your phone in there and it has to be there. And any violation of that would result in the confiscation of the phone. Because I really do see the teacher's point of view on this,
Oh,
that kids are
yes.
using the phones for all kinds of things in class. And I also totally relate to how distracting a phone can be. How you got to check your notifications, and so I mean I see the kids' point of view on this, that it's a really fun thing and it's a really great way to stay connected, but it just seems like it's at odds with educational purposes.
Speaking of technology, you've initiated on the Picayune Sentinel. We're talking to Eric Zorn. He publishes a weekly newsletter you can get for free. Email ericzorn@gmail.com. He calls it the Picayune Sentinel. He's a longtime Tribune columnist, and it's current events and stuff. Eric's also part of our Mincing Rascals podcast panel. And you started something called Regrettables on your site. What is that?
Well, I was thinking, when I was on my recent driving vacation, and my wife and I were using Waze and Google Maps to find our way to people's homes and hotels and stuff, and how handy that was. And I recall that back in the early 90s, I had written a column just basically poo-pooing the whole idea of smart cars and GPS guidance. I was just saying, nobody needs this, and this is a crazy idea. It's, like flying cars or something like that, that it was just not something that was going to happen, and the government was going to invest a bunch of money in this, and I just said, this is really dumb. And it made me realize that there were, over the course of 41 years of the Tribune, there were some columns that I published that were regrettable, and this was certainly one of them that came to mind. And I thought, well, I'm going to start a feature in my newsletter where I publish some of my most regrettable columns and, offer my amends for them. But I also like to contact some of my fellow columnists who are now retired or working elsewhere to ask them for their most regrettable columns, because it's inevitable that over the years you'll write things that just don't stand the test of time at all, or that you just so you even sometimes columns you'll read the next morning and go, what was I thinking? I had a bad day. And so I thought it'd be more amusing, rather than publishing the highlights or the best of kind of things, to publish the lowlights, and talk about how easy it is to make mistakes. Have you, John, as a radio talk show host, ever said anything that you would could wish you could have retracted at some point?
Yeah, I thought about that. No, I've never.
No, never. Yeah, well, of course, your opinions are always so righteous, so I can't imagine you would.
That's the problem, too. They're too righteous sometimes. Every now and then, and I suppose a print columnist feels the same way, it's very easy to get strident and feel really good, especially if you get wrapped up in the language of the thing and you're just pounding away or yakking away in my case. And then you're like, oh, settle down. And by the way, maybe I didn't even. As I said to Wendy Snyder, we were talking about the conversation you and I are having on her show this morning. I said Donald Trump won't be the president and he won't be the candidate. And if he is either, I'll wax your camper. And then he became the candidate the first time around. And I had to wax campers for a day in the hot sun in Minnesota. And I don't know that that's as rich as your opening regrettable. Can I read from it, Eric?
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah, I deserve it.
33 years ago, you wrote, among other things, "I don't mean to be a Luddite about this, but the smart car will never succeed." You were talking about computerized guidance for your driving, like you are using Waze. "I don't mean to be a
Oh.
Luddite about this, but the smart car will never succeed. consumers will never buy it in significant numbers. If they buy it, they won't use it. If they use it, it won't do them much good. To discover these patently obvious truths, various government agencies have announced they will dump about $30 million in public money into a five-year test of this system in our northwest suburbs. Secretary Skinner was in Schaumburg last week, you wrote 33 years ago, to preside over the unveiling of ADVANCE, Advanced Driver and Vehicle Advisory Navigation Concept, and then tool around in an Oldsmobile that voiced to him such computer-synthesized profundities as, at the next stop sign, turn right. As we said in elementary school, well, duh. Here's a hint to Skinner and the bureau technocrats who are predicting that someday we'll have guidance computers in our car. If you wish to learn how best to get from point A to point B, you have only to look at a common road map and listen to all news radio for traffic information. Eric, your witness.
I plead nolo contendere, I think is the legal term here. No, I mean, that was about as wrongheaded as I get. I mean, there are other instances where I was wrongheaded, and I'll get to those, I think, as the weeks go by. But I've been asking, like, I've asked Mary Schmeek, and I've asked Steve Chapman, and I'm going to ask, like, Heidi Stevens, see if they've got any that they felt didn't stand the test of time. They don't have to all be quite as fatuous as that particular column was, but... every year, it's true. I do predictions every year. I've done it for years. Maybe the last 20 years, I'll do like predictions of the news. I'll say, who do you think is going to win Congress? Who's going to win the presidency? Who's going to win the mayor's race? Well, how are the White Sox going to do? And so on. And I'm often wrong about that, but I don't say it with such annoying vehemence. You know, I mean, I'll say like, I predict the Cubs will do better than the White Sox this year, for instance, but I don't say like, I'm sure about this, you know, put your money on this. And that was really the tone of that column. Like, what was that line? As we said in elementary school, well, duh.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like, I was really putting myself out there. I did. And at the end of that column, I said that I will eat a copy of this column at the Des Plaines Oasis in rush hour if in 10 years computer guidance systems for cars are used by more than 2% of the driving public. And I just made it under the wire. 10 years and one day later, I wrote a column saying that I had been kind of wrong about that because only 1.1% of cars at that point we're using satellite-aided computer guidance. Of course, now, this is something I didn't predict, and I don't think anybody else did either, which is that we don't have remember the Garmin devices?
Plug into your cigarette lighter, yeah.
Right, and of course, your phone has now taken over that role. And since 90% of the population now or something like that has a smartphone, and the smartphone has built-in guidance systems, we all have this now. I mean, it'd be somewhere around 90% of people driving have access to that. And it's really handy. That's the thing that I missed totally. You know, I was like, oh, you could always use a map. Come on, dude. But clearly, these guidance systems are so good for, you know, identifying traffic problems that, you know, that are not on your paper roadmap, obviously, and just, you know, clever routes to places that are not obvious on a map. And also, you can see what hotels and restaurants are nearby. I mean, it's a complete game changer. And I was completely wrong. So I was wrong. So there you go. I'm going to hope to keep that feature alive.
Oh, I think it's a good idea. You know, I was about to say your colleague, were you and Nina Metz at the Tribune at the same time? She writes about television. She has a series of columns where the movie and TV stars tell her about their worst moment ever. And it could be something personal or something on stage or screen. But those are, I think, like what you're doing here, nice reminders that we can all get things wrong sometimes and life goes on. Right, Eric?
Yeah. And I love that feature by Nina. I hope that she's thinking about making a book out of them because it's also a really nice way for it to get these celebrities who've been interviewed about everything.
Yeah.
To talk about things that they haven't talked about. And it's a window into their personalities. And usually the stories are not horrifying. They're just bad moments that we have, but we all have them. And I certainly can look back over my career, looking over my columns to write, you know, 120, 130 columns a year. And so some of them are bound to be clinkers, and a couple of them are real stinkers. So you know, there you go.
Clinkers and stinkers. I don't know if you run into this, but Brenda will have her phone out when we're driving, and I'll have my phone. And then we have a guidance system on the dashboard, and they're arguing with each other. And so then Brenda tends to believe her phone more than the dashboard. I tend to believe the dashboard more than – so we kind of – it's not – It's almost too much information now, you know?
Right. Well, we use Waze, W-A-Z-E, the guidance program that you can just download for free. And this morning, Johanna and I were on our way somewhere, and Waze was telling us to go all these crazy back streets. It's got this idea that it wants to save you 30 seconds by sending you down alleys and byways.
Yeah.
And her phone just said, hey, just get on the Kennedy.
Exactly. And, exactly. Well, that we run into the same thing. And sometimes it seems like it's quicker as the crow flies. Sometimes the devices seem to know the traffic at the moment, but maybe they don't know construction or the fact that there was a crash on the Kennedy. That's why I believe traffic on WGN Radio will keep you updated with the latest traffic information. Eric, you wrote about Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson, who do a morning show on another radio station in town. What happened and what did you say?
Well, this was right after the Gus Walls moment at the Democratic National Convention. That's when the 17-year-old son of vice presidential nominee Tim Walls was openly weeping and pointing at the stage and saying, "That's my dad. That's my dad." And it was a very emotional moment. And Gus Walls is what they say neurodivergent. He's got some ADHD issues and some nonverbal learning issues. And it was pretty clear to those of us who were watching that there was something a little off about Gus, but you know, he's a person with some disabilities. Anyway, the next morning on this conservative radio station, Dan Proft, who's a Florida-based Illinois political consultant, was mocking Gus Walls and you know, what's wrong with this kid? Somebody get this kid some Ritalin and so on. He was saying, come on, I don't want to go after family members, but that's just weird. What the heck? That's bizarre. And his sidekick, Amy Jacobson, who, remember, used to be a reporter for NBC5 in town and had gotten some trouble there and is now a right-wing talk show host, she was sort of going along, and she did a little imitation of Gus Walls. And the fallout from this was that Proft was dismissed from the board of an organization that helps people with disabilities. He was a fundraiser for them and a member of their board. They just didn't like the tone that he took. And Amy Jacobson lost her gig as the volleyball coach at Amundsen High School in Chicago. That she resigned from that position under a lot of pressure, is my understanding, that parents really didn't want her there, that she had mocked this child, and that this was unacceptable. And so they talked her into resigning. And my take on it was that I thought that, you know, that this was Dan Proft was the one who was really creating the moment, and Amy joined in a little bit, and I thought that it was bad what she did, but I thought that it's something that could have been handled in a different way, that she could have maybe given a speech to the school at Amundsen to talk about why it's wrong to make fun of anybody, but it's certainly wrong to make fun of kids with differences like that. And it could have been a really, I think, a much better teaching moment than just like getting rid of her the way they did. Understand that she's a good volleyball coach and that she doesn't bring this kind of mockery and contempt for people with disabilities into her teaching. Anyway, but I mean, my point was I thought that they could have handled it as a teaching moment rather than as a cancellation moment for her. And readers disagree with me on this. I took a little click poll, you know, like your news clicks. And it was like I had more than 1,000 votes on it, and 57% of the people thought no, that she deserved to go. She had to go
from her part-time volleyball coaching job, not from her radio job.
Not from her radio job. I mean, I don't think that is on the table. She was on the station this morning. I just did a little check on that to see. So no, she's fine there. And I don't, you know, it's like, I'm not into canceling people. I mean, if she had like used some horrible words to describe Gus Walls or expressed real contempt for him, or used some sort of, ethnic slur at some point, then yeah, I'd say, yeah, that person doesn't belong in the classroom. This struck me as a lesser kind of offense and one that she could have, been been asked to talk to students about and to have them see why this is so hurtful. And, But again, like I said, most of my readers, a good solid majority of my readers disagree with me on this. I published a bunch of letters from them in today's Picayune Plus, my Tuesday supplement to the Picayune Sentinel, which comes out on Thursdays. And I, publish a lot of these letters, and I accept the fact that, I don't know if I got this one wrong or not, but people certainly disagree with me on it. I don't think you got it wrong.
About her employment at a radio station that's a hate radio station, what she and her partner did was hateful and mean, because the defense of it would be, well, we didn't know the person had a disability, but if he didn't have a disability, then we would have openly mocked a 17-year-old who is proud of his dad, as though that's fair game or a good idea or funny or valid criticism or even an interesting observation. We all saw what was going on there. And I just don't know, in an age when we do know the dangers of bullying and pressure on young people, how even for a moment, whether or not they knew that kid was suffering from something, that was living maybe a more challenged life than others, that they thought for a moment that that would be good commentary just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Even if he didn't have any challenges in his life, that's still 100, as we said in the Mincing Rascals podcast, that's not Hunter Biden there. That's not Don Jr. there. That's a 17-year-old kid. And I think the sin that Amy Jacobson made, and I think she should keep her job at a radio station because that's what they do there, but was not standing up for the kid, because Prof started it. She could have said, she could have been the pushback, the gentle pushback. She could have said, hey, have we Googled this kid? What do we know? And he was proud of his dad. How hard would that have been?
Well, that's a really good point. And I think you're right to broaden it out to beyond just a disability, that it's never right to drag a kid, especially when it's dealing with his parents. 17-year-old kid, he's not involved politically. It doesn't matter if he's neurotypical or neurodivergent. You don't pick on someone like that. You don't make fun of someone like that. That is definitely true. And I think some of my readers made that point in their letters today, which is like the fact that he's got some disabilities should make no difference to the fact that it's wrong to mock him. And I think what happens in these situations is people get really caught up in their partisan notions. I remember they used to call Chelsea Clinton the White House dog. I mean, there was all kind of, and people said awful things about Amy Carter. And people have said bad things about Barron Trump, but I don't recall seeing anything.
I don't either. But I do remember. But at the same time, this goes down. Sarah Palin, Susan's suit still has traction with the New York Times, and she is critical of the way people treated her children. One who was also neurodivergent. I don't remember what the issue was with. Was it Trigg or one of her kids? But one of her kids had some issue, and Sarah Palin was very forward about her family. I think part of the criticism of the way Sarah Palin handled it was that she was seen to be, and this is the partisan view, but some thought she was using her kids for her own political advantage. I don't think the Walzes were doing that about their son.
No, I agree with that, and I don't remember participating myself in any of the mockery of Palin's kids, or she had a bunch of kids, right? And some of them got into some trouble, I remember,
well,
too.
But they or their husbands, yeah, whatever, boyfriends.
I mean, when they become adults or when they become part of the story, I mean, I'm not even sure. It's unclear to me exactly how much Hunter Biden belongs in this conversation. I guess maybe he was playing off his dad's name, we have to say that that's wrong.
Yes, it is.
I'm not sure that he committed any crimes related to that. I guess he had some, the gun registration problems and
no,
so
but the,
on.
But the point, Eric, is that if you're going to bring the kids in, I say they need to be adults and they need to have been proactive about their inclusion in that debate. And Hunter, my understanding was, certainly used his dad's name and position to try and further himself financially. If you want to talk about that or mock that or criticize that adult male, even though he had addiction issues, and I don't think that's real funny, at least that's a different animal than Gus Walz.
Right. And of course, it brings up the question of where we draw the line for teachers about what they do outside of the classroom and how that affects what they do in the classroom, or in this case, in the gymnasium. What kind of belief system can she have? What kind of things can she say publicly that make it so that, I mean, if she's mocking kids on her teams, which there's no evidence of that I know of, or saying things in the school that are hurtful, that is completely a deal breaker. What she says outside the school, what she believes outside the school, I mean, there's gradations of that that you have to consider here. And to my mind, this was not an offense that made that she was unfit to be around students. Like I say, most readers disagree with me on that, but I thought this was an opportunity for the school to engage this question, and I don't know if they are or not, but for the school to say, this is what happened, this is why it happened, this is why it was wrong, and to have Amy Jacobson there to talk about that and say, look, this can really hurt people, and this has hurt people, and this
I don't know if she's said publicly that she would be amenable to that. Does that reflect her views? Would she rebuke what happened on her own radio show? I don't know that she said that.
Well, I read the transcript of this morning's show, and I did not see her address the situation at all. She's been on vacation the last couple of days, and she was back today, and I did not see her address this. So maybe she's just going to put it behind her and move on. But I think that this is something that maybe the school will deal with it independently. I certainly hope so, because I think it's really important to realize, for kids to realize how hurtful this kind of stuff can be. And so, anyway, I'm wrong about that, John, but I'm used to being wrong.
Some people say you're wrong about that. You were definitely wrong about navigation in cars. Eric Zorn writes the Picayune Sentinel. He'll sign you up for free if you email ericzorn@gmail.com, and we'll be on the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow. Thank you, Eric.
Look forward to it, John. Thanks.